Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Hi, friends. This is Adam Borneman with the Ministry Collaborative. Today, I'm pleased to have some repeat guests on the podcast, and I'm especially pleased because it's Katie Nakamura-Ringers and David Zoll, who I just really enjoy as conversation partners in general. So it's fun to have the three of us all together today. Could you guys just give like a 15-second snippet of where you are and what you're doing there?
I'm Katie Nakamura-Ringers. I am joining you from Birmingham, Alabama. It's my hometown. I'm an Episcopal priest. I started a little church here called The Abbey. And currently I work on the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church's staff in the church planting office.
And I'm David Zoll, and I'm speaking to you from Charlottesville, Virginia, right across the street from Christ Episcopal Church, where I serve on staff, but most of my time is spent writing and directing this thing called Mockingbird.
Yeah, it's great to have both of you. In addition to just you two being really great conversation partners on a whole host of things, I wanted to bring you two together because you're also in pretty different contexts, but enough overlapping to kind of have a good generative conversation about faith and faith formation and what's going on in the culture, what's going on in the church. David, you've written quite a bit, and I see a lot of your work as intersecting with this kind of stuff a lot, both in Seculosity and Low Anthropology, which I highly recommend to folks. I see you trying to really deal with what are the things in our culture that are shaping us, even the things that we're not paying enough attention to, and what does it have to do with our faith and our following Jesus. And Katie, in your case, in a highly adaptive, messy church planting on the ground context, and you've been doing that really well in some really beautiful ways for a long time now. So I'm curious to see how we can bring those two things together. The other reason I'm interested in this is because I think faith formation, I'm just finding that to be an increasingly fraught notion or phrase. And I wanted you to help me clearly define exactly what faith formation is from now, forever, for all of our listeners. Kidding, of course. But when I say that phrase, faith formation, what comes to mind for you? What's at stake in that? What are you thinking about?
Well, my Pavlovian response to it is to think of all the textbooks and resources, I guess now they're mostly online, that have to do with faith formation, like programs, whether for adults or children. But I think if I were to just go and ask a whole bunch of people what formed you in faith, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that they'd talk about any of those programs or resources. I think they tell me a story about a moment when they encountered God or when their faith was really tested and they found themselves sort of on the margin of faith and formation or of church or of Jesus, whatever it is, and somehow found their way back to a knowledge of being God's beloved.
I think that's very well said. The only thing I'd add to it is that sometimes the word formation can feel like you're a project. Mm-hmm. I hear that and I think you want to change me. You know, it's like when you fall in love with someone and you're like, I want to form you. You don't want to be necessarily formed by the person you're married to. At least you want to be loved first. So I know what it's getting at. I know faith formation is just the words we give to how we grow into faith and the ways we develop and sort of some best practices even. But when I hear the word formation, sometimes I want to run. Mm-hmm. It's hard not to receive it as slightly as a form of judgment. Like, yeah. You mean I'm not okay now? You know, it's like the Calvin and Hobbes thing. It's like, what are your New Year's resolutions? And he says, what do you think I need to change? What's wrong with me?
Yeah. What's some other language we can put around this that gets closer to the thing that I think we kind of have in mind somewhere? Is it nurture? Is it cultivation? Like, what is the thing that we're after? Or maybe we shouldn't be after anything.
I think cultivation is a great word. I always think of cultivation sort of in terms of gardening and stuff, and there's a much more organic language. Nurture, to me, I mean, if it's great if you had a good relationship with your mom. I love the word cultivate, but I know what you're talking about. I'd really be interested to hear from everyone else on that.
So I really like the word disciple. And I've gotten in massive amounts of trouble for using the word disciple as a verb, like discipling someone. I think it kind of has that same context that David was talking about of you're trying to change me. So I've tried to leave that behind a little bit. I like the word companioning, faith invitation. I do like nurturing. kind of the words that get to that idea of like walking along with someone down a similar road and not just telling them what to think and what to believe, but encountering some similar experiences that you work on together to be able to find the God and the Jesus and what we meet along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. I don't know if it's a hill worth dying on to try to rechange the words faith formation. Like that's sort of what we're going with these days. So I understand. I do love walking alongside. Mm-hmm. There's also connotations to that too, but no words are perfect.
Yeah. But I like what's bubbling up for me in the midst of that constructive critique. I think it's generating some good ideas. So yeah, it's not a hill I would want to die on either, but I actually love where it's taking my mind and just thinking more carefully about what we might mean by that. And I also imagine too, that both of you suggested this is just like everything else, highly contextual. Thinking carefully about the language we might use. So whatever we call it, Katie, earlier you mentioned about the importance of story in this, and you juxtaposed or contrasted that a little bit with how we typically think about what the tools of formation, of cultivation might be. So I want to hear more about that from each of you. If you think back to your own faith cultivation, I think I'm just going to use that now forever. I love that. If you think more about that, what are the people, the events, the experiences that have been benchmarks in your life that you can think about and say, yeah, that really was a seminal part of who I've become in Jesus?
I mentioned before we started recording that I grew up at a church called St. Andrew's. It's near the university campus here in Birmingham. It's a historic church. It had rectors that had ties to the civil rights movement, always kind of a progressive place at a soup kitchen when I was a kid. And when I was growing up in the late 80s, 90s, we were in the midst of the AIDS crisis. And this church was one of the few affirming places in the Episcopal Church, but also in the city of Birmingham in terms of churches. And people didn't really have language around that crisis. They also didn't have language around all the many different facets of being welcoming to LGBTQ plus folks.
Mm-hmm.
So I can look back and even as a little kid, watch my parents trying to wrap their hearts and their minds around how to be loving, how to be accepting, even in the face of really not understanding what was going on. Mm-hmm. And sometimes maybe even like being a little turned off or afraid, right? And I think back on that, I think it guided my priesthood, which has primarily been with folks just a little bit more on the margin or types of church that are just a little bit less mainstream. It was being part of that experience of trying to work through something that didn't have a very clear answer. It does in hindsight, but in that moment, it didn't.
I love what Katie said about story. And a lot of times people will, when their faith has been unformed, shall we say, they'll point to maybe a doctrine or they'll point to some sort of assertion that they felt clubbed with. But they usually, when they talk about their formation and the ways in which they've grown in faith, they've wanted to become more of a Christian, become more involved in church to get to know Jesus better. They almost always point to a certain relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think relationships for me that have done that kind of garden variety stuff like coaches, but they're not always within the church, you know. Like I think like a very good therapist that I had when I was going through a tough time in my 20s, she was to me, I knew she was a Christian. It wasn't part of the therapy necessarily, but for me to be able to work through pain in the context where God was not sort of out of bounds and to be met with grace in the middle of a struggle was her name was Dorothy Martin, and she was a very important figure for me. But the other way I would say that my faith gets formed is through art. And that a lot of the times that is story. I'm thinking of books. I'm thinking of music, especially for me. And you have a relationship with those things. I was just thinking about it in terms of there's a new touring production of Les Mis that's going around the country right now. And the first time I engaged with that, like really engaged with that musical, and I'm not a big musical guy, but it just hits you like a ton of bricks, the Christianity in that the gospel, the grace message is just so emotionally plausible and powerful that I cannot help but say that those are the sorts of things. Well, that I want to be closer to, whatever that is. And I'm crying and I can't quite discern it, but I find that to be very powerful. And you have echoes of that in all sorts of different art and some of it's not heavy. Some of it can be very light, in fact.
Yeah. As you all are talking, I'm thinking too about my own experiences, and I realize that the relationships or the experiences or the moments, they all sort of revolve around something being modeled for me, even if I can't quite put my finger on it or analyze it or name it. So, and just to contrast that with, I grew up in conventional mainline Sunday school classes and that sort of thing. I don't remember a sentence of any of that, but I remember very specifically who the adults were that had some spiritual maturity that were clearly investing in me, even outside of that hour on Sunday morning. And there's so many examples of that. I was recently at my congregation here in Roswell, one of the things I have the privilege of doing to help out is to administer communion to some of our inbound widows. Just sitting with women in their 90s and hearing them just talk about their faith, listening to that for me and them modeling something that I can't even really describe or interpret and just being around it is incredibly valuable. And I think the more experiences I have like that, the more instructive that is for me, especially in our work of working with so many pastors, just to remind them that, you know, it is okay for you to just model this stuff. Actually, even earlier this week, I started playing around with the phrase of less management, more modeling, and that it's okay to make that shift. I think most of the time when I have this conversation with folks, they always go back to the sorts of things you're describing. I wanted to look at it from the other angle too and chat for a moment about what's getting in the way of that, and especially things that seem innocuous or trivial, but that are actually really getting in the way. David, you've literally written two books about this. I've been thinking a lot more lately about in our culture, things that are just sort of accepted and normal and we just don't pay much attention to. But then when you start to dig deeper down, you realize, wow, this is a thing that's really quite an obstacle for us in the way that we model faith or receive that modeling.
Well, I jump in just by saying I think busyness and sort of overactivity is just a huge distraction for all of us. I mean, to move from one pressure cooker to the next, no matter if you're in for-profit, nonprofit work, whatever, that's a huge thing. The lack of silence that we experience, the default reflex to equate results with worth, the inability to conceive of people outside of their productivity. These are kind of like the over-quantification of everything under the sun, the way that we optimize one another, we process things, everything's computation. I think that's kind of dehumanizing, and I think in a lot of ways it's pernicious. It's sort of like a low-level reimagining of what it means to be a human being that can be very difficult to step outside of.
Mm-hmm. I'd add to that the segregated ways that many of us live, you know, in terms of being in neighborhoods and schools and work with people that are our same ethnicity, culture, socioeconomic class, and the very little time Americans spend hanging out with each other.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There was just an article in The Atlantic about this, how hanging out is dying. And when I tell these stories about like encountering Jesus in a way that has really formed me, right, as a Christian, 98% of them have to do with either being part of an encounter between two or more people or having witnessed an encounter between two or more people. Often people who don't on the surface have a whole lot in common. And so as our culture moves away from those two things, I think those types of opportunity for witnessing and being formed by that witnessing become a lot harder.
Yeah. If I can put a plug in for another episode of this podcast, you know, Katie, you and I had a conversation not too long ago. That episode is called The Church of Don't Be a Jerk, but it talks about the running crew you have. This just sort of, yes, it's a running group, but it's really just people hanging out.
That's right.
I follow pretty closely the incredibly troubling trends, particularly about men in our culture and what's happening with accelerated isolation and mental health. I mean, it's a massive, massive problem. And I think you're right. I mean, maybe formation, it starts with hanging out. And to David's point, it starts with just seeing people's humanity, period, full stop, and not needing to calibrate that along the lines of productivity or whatever these other things might be. And it's easy to say that, but it's very hard for us because the culture, we're just so immersed in it. It's really hard not to do that. And I appreciate the word of grace around that. Mm-hmm. Just in our final few moments here, where are you seeing signs of the spirit at work in this area, just in the community that you're in? Where are you seeing people's faith deepening, maturing, being cultivated?
Well, I just add my two cents to the exercise groups are becoming sort of de facto churches in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Again, anything that brings people together. And I would say also across generationally brings people together. That's something we're more and more segregated by and doesn't get talked about much. Or anything that brings people in proximity to death. Oh, Ash yeah. Wednesday was yesterday when we're recording this. And if you're totally cordoned off from death, a lot of religious questions won't make much sense to you. And our culture tends to do that. Where I am right now, our church, we're experiencing a post-COVID, like, you know, we're like everyone's so anxious about, is anyone going to come back? You know, we were closed for a long time. And we're seeing a genuine hunger from people. And it's not necessarily folks who were big churchgoers beforehand or are sort of deconstructing from some conservative form of religion. We're just seeing regular folks who are needing something mm-hmm. and they're feeling addressed and they're interested in Jesus and they find themselves in church and almost don't know how to account for it. It's like coupled with possibly with a slight openness to trusting institutions again, seeing sort of where it's gotten us. But we're seeing our church numbers are exploding. And for a mainline church, it's very, you almost get embarrassed about it because you don't want other people to feel badly. But it's just a hunger. And there's a lot of community. There's a lot of like service going on. And the church is sort of right at the center.
That's so awesome to hear.
What about the congregation's response to that hunger has been so healthy and life-giving?
We're not trying to control it, I don't think, mm-hmm. or bottle it. I don't think it's down to one single factor. We've been talking about it. But there's an enthusiasm. And everywhere I go, people are like, why do you think so many people are at that church right now? And I say, like, we're providing things that people actually are needing, and we're just very involved in the community. But we've also, I think people are feeling addressed. There's so much pressure and so much despair to be given a word of hope week after week mm-hmm. and not be told you now have to go do this thing, but instead invited into some things they can do if they want. I think it's tremendously exciting. And I say that as, you know, we thought it would happen 6 to 8 months before it did. And we were starting to give up. So maybe it had to do with us giving up some control too.
Wow.
I like that story, David, because it says something that I sort of observe to be true, which is, gosh, no matter what we do, no matter how many obstacles we put in front of it, like the Spirit's going to move. Like the Spirit of God, but also like just like the human spirit is going to keep on seeking the things that it desires, like love and belonging and God. So there are all these obstacles, busyness and social media and politics and blah, blah, blah. But it's like sort of like taffy, like you see it pulling apart, but you know, it's eventually like the Spirit's going to draw it back in.
Thanks so much for that good word. And this is exactly why I love talking to you too, is that there's this really good combination of just realism and in-depth conversation, but also tremendous hope. And I think that's so valuable, certainly is for me, and hopefully for you too. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.